This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
What's up?
What's going on, buddy?
Oh, just hanging out at the shop on a rainy day today. So
we have
all that on the schedule. I'm like, that's perfect for this.
Our rainy weather is coming. My guest, Brett Blumenthal, he is a fishing guy. How long have you been up a guide now in North Dakota? How many years has he been up there?
7 years now.
Holy moly.
I know.
And to think your very first radio interview was with Uncle Crash.
I think it was.
It's been fun watching you because I follow you obviously on the socials, as the kids would say, and on your YouTube channel. And one of the things that always fascinates me is the consistency of the fish you guys are catching up there. It doesn't matter what time of the year. And I, first of all, I know you guys you're busting your humps behind the scenes, right? I know it's not easy. The videos make it look easy. The pictures in the cleaning shack look easy. But it doesn't matter the time of the year. It doesn't matter the approach. You guys are putting fish on the boat. So it's been 7 years. What have you learned?
I was just thinking about that before you called, actually, and I'm surprised how different every year's turned out to be. Like, of course, it's Missouri River fishing, so every year there's a good chunk of the year that we're pulling bottom mouthers and night crawlers to put stuff in the boat. But with each year having different water levels, is the water on the way up? Is it on the way down? Do you have flooded vegetation? Do you have stuff in the back of the bay to get walleyes back there? Some years in July, we're pulling bottom bouncers in 8 to 10 feet in the middle of July. And then other years, it's 35 feet at the end of June. So it's like every year is a different piece of the puzzle, even though it's the same system, mostly because of the water level fluctuations, but also just kind of the way the weather starts out, the way the seasons kind of set tones and things. You know, some years the fish are super aggressive and other years they're a little tentative and you got to kind of finesse them. So it's exciting every year when you get out in the spring, especially that post-spawn bite, and try to figure out what the tone is going to be for the year, what the fish are going to want. Are you going to fish aggressive or do you got to kind of, you know, finesse them and trick them a little bit?
He's up at Lake Sakakawea, and that's been one of the premier fisheries. It really has in the upper Midwest. And one of the things that people like about going to North Dakota is you can actually bring home, some food. You can bring home a couple of fish and have a great time. And you can do almost a Canadian-like experience without going across the border. So it works out pretty good. I mean, you guys are pretty isolated when you get up there. You're kind of getting away from it all. How's the water level been and the conditions for fishing been this year for you up there?
It's been pretty darn good. It's a little lower than what I would say would be average, but it's still great for fishing. We've had access to all the ramps and everything. So a couple springs prior to this, you know, as we got up there in April, the first thought was, where can we launch? Where can't we launch? We didn't have any problems with ramps this year. So as long as we don't have that, you know, a little lower water actually concentrates the fish, which makes them a little easier to find, which is kind of fun. So, yeah, that's kind of been the deal.
Are they doing a bit of a pull down right now in anticipation of the winter coming up?
No, so they did a pull down last winter.
Okay.
I'm not exactly sure. I think a lot of it had to do with they wanted to help some of the stuff downstream. I know Oahe was even lower than Sakakawea was.
And
further down, I'm sure it was the same. So they pulled it down 8 feet in February last year, I think, under the ice. So it kind of set us up a little. We were set up really good last fall. but they pulled it down that 8 feet. So we're, again, a little lower than average, but not bad. I don't expect a pull down this year. I don't think they're going to do that, but every once in a while, the course surprises you.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah, I can't speak exactly where it is, but it seems like we're okay this year. We've kind of come out of the drought. It's been pretty average. It's been a little dry lately, but that's not unusual. We got a forecast for some more rain across much of the Midwest happening here in the next week or so. So, you know, it all depends on what forecast model you want to believe for the winter.
Yeah.
How much longer will you guys have boats out on the river?
I mean, it could be a while. I'm looking at the 10-day this morning, and I don't see anything that's going to threaten fishing by any means. So I intend to be here into November for a while if I can, unless we get a big change in a cold snap and a snowstorm. But I know a couple years ago, there were some guys that were fishing right up to December 31st, and then January 1st, it got to 30 below and a hard freeze in one day. Yeah, it's possible. It's a lot of water to cool down, so it doesn't necessarily ice over that fast.
Yeah.
Unless you get a real hard cold snap.
So I've talked to a bunch of guides throughout the Midwest this year about walleye, and there seems to be no general consensus on what the best tried and true way to catch walleye is. It all depends on the body of water. I was talking to some guys from Minnesota, and I was like, "Would you guys pull bottom bouncers?" And they thought I had worms coming out of my ears. They're like, "What are you talking about? What the hell's a bottom?" I mean, they were like, "What? No, we jig. Yeah. That's all we do is we jig." Other guys were like, "Nope, you got to pull planer boards and wraps. It's the only way you can get them. Or planer boards with live bait. You know." So there's a lot of different ways. You guys do pretty much the spectrum up there, don't you?
We do, yeah. So the spring is a jigging season, the summer is a bottom bouncer season, and the fall is a deeper jigging / snap jigging season is kind of the basic way. But, you know, within there, sometimes there can be some little nuances and some little trendy bites that happen here and there and some new things you can figure out. But that's kind of the basic way that I see it. Shallow jigging in the spring, bottom bouncers for the bulk of the summer. If the guys want to do crankbaits, that's a good time to pull crankbaits. That's not my favorite way to do it. But then in the fall, typically a deeper kind of jigging, a more aggressive snap jigging. And if you get the right weather conditions and you get post turnover, you know, turnover is kind of a funnier thing on Sakakawea than it is on an isolated natural lake, but you can get that shallow bite that kind of goes full circle. That feels like spring again at the end of fall. So
do you guys ever do much with downriggers?
The salmon guys do. I don't do it with walleyes. If the fish are deep for me, I prefer to do jigging wraps, some kind of snap jigging. You can do snap weights. I know some guys run snap weights and cranks, which it's a little easier than like lead cord trolling, so you don't have so much line out. But I don't do any of that.
So
no, I don't have.
I don't know what the response is like up there, or what the feeling is. But having conversations with, I'm not talking about the Great Lakes because that's a whole different body of water. But other bodies of water across the Midwest, there seems to be resentment towards the downrigger stuff because you're pulling the fish out of such a deep area. You got to keep that fish no matter what because of the pressure on the fish and the lungs coming out. And so there's a lot of times that you're damaging small fish or you're damaging trophy fish or slot fish that you have to push back. So there seems to be, and I'd never thought about it before because it's not something that's in my wheelhouse. So it's not something that I consider very much. But having conversation with these guys, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I didn't realize that the guys are, not all guides, but more guides. Again, Great Lakes, whole different ballgame. I get that, whatever. But a lot of these, especially Northern Iowa and Minnesota lakes, guys are like, no, we're kind of frowning on it. And I haven't heard if, you know, the Game and Parks or DNR or anybody else is starting to do pushback against it. But it's nice to see some of the guys are like, no, it's not a good way to take care of fish. Because of the mortality rates that's involved with that. And I just something that I noticed, and I didn't know if that was a thing in other areas or a concern in other areas or if it was isolated.
It definitely is. Like we spent the previous 2 years, this year a little bit, we've had fish moving a lot deeper late summer, early fall than they usually do. So a lot of years we might fish 30 foot and less the whole year, but we've fished a lot of 40 to 45, 50 feet the previous couple. I don't know exactly what that trend is or if that's going to continue or if it's a little bit of an anomaly, but yes, we have that issue. And I know Oahu is even worse, you know, down south, I think maybe because it gets even warmer down there, but that isn't anytime you're over 30 feet and there's definitely a lot more, you know, people didn't know about the science for the longest time. Like it was pretty obvious if you brought up a fish and its eyes are bugging out of its face, you kind of knew something was wrong. But if you're catching them out of 35 feet of water and you don't see any obvious signs, people didn't think about it, but we're getting more science about barotrauma. It definitely has an effect, but then there's also some people that, you know, are saying that maybe we haven't fully figured out this science and that we don't know for sure that just because you caught that fish in 35 feet of water automatically means it is going to die or that it even has any effect. Is the key just as long as you can get the fish to the bottom, will it recover fine? So it's good that we're shedding some light on this and knowing about it, but I don't think we know the complete story, but it's getting a lot of attention. I've got a lot of attention on videos that I've made and comments that I've made where they'll look at my depth finder and I caught a fish in 28 feet and the recommendation is that 25 and less, you know.
So
it's a fine line sometimes, you know, but if you do fish for sure over 40 feet, you know, keep the fish and then get out of that depth is kind of the recommendation. They keep pulling it back shallower and shallower. 30 was the number last year from the Game and Fish in North Dakota. Now some people are starting to lean towards 25, somewhere in that zone, but it's good that we got some more attention on it. I don't think we 100% understand it, but it is an issue everywhere.
Let's touch the third rail when it comes to the controversy in the fishing world, live scopes.
Yeah.
I knew I was going to bring you up, right?
Yeah.
Is it a good thing up there or is it a bad thing?
I think it's just a thing. It's just another tool. I mean, I do think there's this perception that since it's so much different than what you're used to looking at, that it automatically makes fishing easy. It's a cheat code. It's not a sport anymore. To me, until you can get some kind of technology that makes fish bite, that would be the real game changer. Does it help? Yes. It's applicable in certain situations. I think it's the most applicable personally for finding a fish that you think is bigger that you want to target in tournaments. So I understand why some people have more concern tournament wise, but as long as you're still following fishing regulations, you know, you're keeping what you're supposed to keep, you're being responsible with deep fish like barotrauma, like we talked about, it's a cool thing that has some nice applications. But at the same time, I know and it happened to me when I first got used to using it. Now that you can see that stupid fish down there and you've thrown at it 18 times and it hasn't bit yet, you get stuck on that fish, whereas you normally would have kept moving. So I think it actually makes some people worse at fishing personally, if you're not paying attention to how to use it. But it's just a tool, in my opinion. You know, people complain about side imaging. I'm sure somebody complained about down imaging and sonar once upon a time.
Yeah.
And, you know, 2-4 years from now, I don't know if anybody will care about it anymore, but maybe they will. It is different. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
It's very different. It's a big advancement. So I understand that anytime you have that situation, you know, it's hard to adjust to it. And some people are going to have some backlash to it.
My most of my experience has been with it in an ice fishing scenario. And, it's helped us find fish and find structure, which is really important when you come to ice fishing. It has not increased the amount of fish that we've caught in any way, shape or form. But it's still cool. It's still cool. And I'm kind of with you. And my argument goes back to outside of fishing. It goes back to, it's the same argument that bow hunters used to have. And bow hunters are the worst cannibals there is, there happen to be. Because when sights and releases came out, there was a huge blowback about that. How much? Oh my God! They're you shouldn't be doing that. And then they legalized crossbows. Oh my God! You're shooting a bolt at 400 to 500 feet per second. Well, yeah, but it doesn't have the kinetic energy of an arrow. It's a lot less, and it's still only good to 30 to 35 yards. And you ever? I mean, all the studies of crossbows. Not to go off the plane, but crossbows kill for people who have a crossbow tag. They're punching a ticket, tagging a deer is 42%. Do you know what a compound bow is? 41.5%. It's the same. And then the cross, or the bow hunting guys got mad about these guys having 75% release or 80% release because it wasn't the same. So technology advances, and then all the other optics that you can use when you're deer hunting right now, and range finders and that sort of thing. To me, okay, I could see the deer, and I know exactly that it's 38.5 yards away. Doesn't mean I'm going to be able to harvest that deer anymore. I just happen to know how far away it is. It's to me, it's the same thing. And once the technology is out there, once that camel's nose is in the tent, it's going to happen. I mean, you can't put that genie back in the bottle. Pick a cliche, Brad. Pick one. I don't care which one you pick. But to me, it's the same. It's again, like you were saying, it's advantageous. It helps you find where fish may or may not be. Does not help you catch any more fish, per se. It just shows you where they're at. One of the things, go ahead.
I got to say one thing that's interesting to me too, is like, there's a lot of, I see a lot of comments and I see a lot of complaints for open water, but I rarely see anybody complain about people using forward facing sonar for ice fishing.
Yeah, exactly.
Cause it's already hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's what it is.
Yeah. And you know, and good, bad, or indifferent about the majority of my fishing is done hard water anymore just because of my schedule, and it's ridiculous. But I got back into it this year. You know, it's small by any of your guys' measures up there. But my personal best, because, you know, I'm in Southwest Iowa. I don't get a walleye fish a lot. I caught a 23.5 incher this year. I'm like, hey, that's a trophy for me. I thought that was a pretty good fish. And 5 minutes later, a guy standing next to me caught a 24.5 and I punched him in the head. But I'm like, whatever, dude. I thought I had the big fish of the day. But one of the things that walleye fishermen deal with, and I don't care where you're at, is they want a little bit of chop. They want a little bit of a wave. Does the wind blow in North Dakota?
Only a little.
Well, don't you guys have enough trees or something? No.
Very little. Very few of those. The one thing we do have, though, is some bluffs. So it's nice. You can fish under some bluffs to get out of the wind sometimes, which is a bonus. But
yeah. One of the things that you posted earlier is, and you did a YouTube video about it, how to fish walleyes in big wind. There's a lot of times that you're going to go out, and it doesn't matter where you're at. You're going to face some wind, especially when you get out from shore for a little bit. What are some of the real quick tips, tricks, and techniques that you can share with people that say, hey, this is what I do that works good for me?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing I think is paying attention to the map, knowing where the wind direction is coming from, to find those places where, especially in the spring, you want to fish windswept stuff. The early summer, you want windswept stuff. But where can you find a spot that has some moving water, but it's not a 4 foot, 5 foot crashing wave? But you find those little areas where the wind's kind of quartering or sweeping across something, and it's still fishable and you can still get some moving water. That's one of the big keys for me, is understanding like the angles the wind's coming from, knowing what spots are going to be effective. But after that, very basically, especially if you're casting, you know, for beginners, like if I'm guiding, I almost 100% need to get people so they can cast downwind. Because if they're casting sideways or into the wind, they can't feel a thing. So, finding a good spot. So there might be a spot that you think is a better spot than another one, but find one that sets up well so it gets a little bit of wind swept but not wind crushed, and allows you to cast downwind to access it so that you have a better chance at making that happen, I guess. And then if you get later in the year, like I was talking about in that video, if you have a snap jigging bite, a jigging wrap bite, if you can throw a heavier bait, it just helps you maintain contact with that bait and be able to feel what's going on better. So if you're in a trolling situation, you know, that's a little bit different. You have a little more control. And then in those situations, you know, I always like to go into the wind if I have enough trolling motor power so that I can control that. If you're going downwind, you're kind of at the whim of the wind, unless you got a drift stock or something. So I like to go into the wind to control stuff like that. And then from that point, a lot of the advances are technology. If you have spot lock, that's amazing and helpful. If you have contour following, you know, on your Hummingbird or whatever your electronics are, that's super helpful. If you have lithium batteries that can help you run all day and that kind of stuff, that's helpful. So there's a lot of technological advances, but the basics would be finding those spots that make it a little easier on you, but still have some wind access and allows you to cast downwind if you're casting.
Yeah, you mentioned drift stocks, and that's what I was thinking about. I mean, I remember a time when that was like the big deal, and there were guys teaching master classes basically before the internets were around on drift stocks and how important they were, and they were a big piece. But I think now, with like you were saying, with the auto lock and the contour following, I'm not saying it's eliminated the need for drift stocks, but it's probably replaced it quite a bit.
A little bit. And there's actually, they have drift modes on some of these trolling motors so that it acts like a stock by turning the other way and kind of taking some of that speed off. I don't know exactly how those things were. I don't have that drift mode on mine, but that's kind of fascinating. And then I was also thinking, when you talk about, of course, somebody like me is going to talk more about the technological ways you can do this. And I'm sure there's some older guys, some old school dudes with tiller motors thinking I should have said something that you need a tiller motor in order to do this because you get better bulk control out of a tiller. I've never owned a tiller motor, but for people that use tillers and know how those work, extremely good bulk control, extremely tight turning abilities. So
how long before you expand and add another boat?
Oh, that I don't know. Things are too expensive, dude.
Right? When did fishing get so expensive?
I don't know. I'm trying to think back, when dad used to take us out, like, was that a big deal back then? Was that hard for him to make that work? I don't know, but I do think technology has changed some things. Obviously everything is a little more expensive than it was 5 years ago, but when you start adding, so many people have 5, 6, 7 graphs in their boat and lithium batteries, and I do think they've gotten good at coming out with things that probably are helpful for fishermen, but the question is, do we really need all that stuff? I do think there's a time, we had this forward facing sonar discussion, but sometimes people can overwhelm themselves by I'll have some clients or something like, well, I'm thinking about getting a boat, and what do I need to do with this, and what do I need to do with this, and what kind of graph? I'm like, why don't you just keep this simple for now? You need a decent trolling motor.
Mm-hmm.
You need at least one good graph. Side imaging's helpful if you can have it. And then just focus on the basics and, learning how to use your rods, learning how to use your lures and your presentations, learning how to jig well, learning how to feel that stuff, whatever it is. So people can get caught up in the big picture things before they, learn step one, running before they walk kind of stuff. So
yeah, and the basics still come into play when you come to fishing. There's still a feel to it. There's still a knowledge of it. There's ability to read it. It's a gift, and it has to be developed. It's some people have it naturally, but it's still, at the same time, it takes a while to figure out. And I'm assuming 7 years in, every year you're learning, right?
Absolutely. That's what's so fun about this. with every season being different, like I said, you get a different feel for how that lake fishes. So I start to get a memory bank thing now of like, all right, 4 years ago, the water levels are kind of at the same part in July, and this spot was pretty good because it sets up with the break line being, 12 feet under the water instead of only 6 feet under the water and all that kind of stuff. So it's fun now to start having a memory bank to draw upon when those conditions actually repeat.
Yeah.
That was something I didn't have the first few years.
Yeah, of course. We've talked about in the past and what led you to make to say a drastic career change is an understatement, from doing what you were doing to get to where you're doing now. Do you still find the satisfaction that, and have you found this, what you were seeking, I should say?
Yeah, for sure. It's different. I was telling some people this year that I feel a little bit like the honeymoon period is over. Like, I still love it as much as I used to, but I also realize that it is a business and I do have to make a certain amount of money to make things work. Whereas in the first few years, I would just kind of, I'm going to go out and I'm going to make a video today and I'm going to run wherever I want to run on the lake. And now maybe this year I'll think more about, well, do I really need to spend $75 in boat gas, or can I make this video in 20,
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So I'm making some smarter decisions and I'm running it more like a long-term, responsible business. But at the same time, it's still everything that I wanted to do, and none of that's changed at all. I still love helping people fish. I love watching other people catch fish, maybe even more so than I did the first few years. I try to get better this year about, you know, instead of concentrating on me figuring the bite out first, like I try to do it through them. How can I, you know, it's a little bit tougher because they don't know some things that you would know, but asking them questions after they get a bite and they miss one, like, okay, how did that feel? What did it feel like?
Yeah.
What was the sensation? And trying to figure out the bite through them rather than my own rod, I think has made me a better guide in the first few years, but it takes a while to get to that point. So
is your best marketing word of mouth?
I probably, but YouTube is starting to be more and more, a productive thing for me for even guiding wise. So it's catching up.
Good.
Facebook, word of mouth, the website, but YouTube is going to be a bigger part of that.
Yeah, because you're actually demonstrating, and you know, people that have an interest in it and people that are curious about it, you can see it.
Yeah.
You can understand it, and it's an important deal. So, got just a minute or so left. What's your winter look like this year? What's going on?
I'm hoping to make some good ice fishing videos. You know, I got into ice fishing a little more the last couple of years and started to do that. I feel like I'm getting a better feel for how that works. And the last couple of years, we had some issues with whether it's too much snow to get out to places or not enough ice to make things work. I'm hoping we have a good, clean ice fishing season and I can make some cool ice fishing videos.
Our ice fishing season last year was horrible.
Yeah.
We had 11 inches of snow all winter. It didn't freeze up till about New Year's Day. And by mid-February, it was over. Over. Yep. I got to do one overnight last year on a farm pond, and that was it. Now, granted, I had a great time, but it was only one, and I'm like, come on. I'm hoping for the best. I got the Dakota Ice Institute ice fishing show happening next weekend up at Sioux Falls. It's kind of always the unofficial start of dreaming for me, I guess. I like to go up to that. It's the second biggest ice fishing show outside of St. Paul every year for the Midwest. Uh-huh. So it's a lot of fun. They're doing a great job with that. So I'm getting excited about it, but I still kind of want to try to get some more, fall fishing in the best that I can. And obviously down here, it's a little longer season than it is up there. But man, there's something surreal about ice fishing. It's just something about it that has really triggered me in a positive manner. And I absolutely love it. Brett, thank you for the time. How can people find you on the socials and the YouTubes?
Yeah, the website is BloomendaleFishing.com, Blumendahl Guide Service on Facebook, and Blumendahl Fishing is the YouTube channel.
Well, the link up on the podcast page as well, so people can check that out as well. Just look up Crash Davis Outdoors, wherever you get your podcasts, and we will go from there. Brett, man, it's a pleasure. I always enjoy your content. I enjoy following you, and I'm happy to call you a family member, brother.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks for having me.
Hello.
Todd, good morning. It's Crash Davis from Crash Davis Outdoors down here in Omaha. How are you, my friend?
Good, Crash. How about yourself?
You know, it's a really nice Halloween weekend. We should be open water fishing yet. The walleye bite is still good. Crappies are still good, at least in our neck of the woods. But I'll be honest with you, everybody's releasing their winter forecast, and I'm really getting excited about hard water fishing.
Well, I hope a lot of people are. That's, we need to have another good year.
Yeah, it's our ice season was a little wonky down here in the southern part of the Midwest. Hopefully things are going to be a little bit different this year. But Todd Heitkamp is my guest from Dakota Angler. And the Ice Institute's getting ready to kick off next weekend. A great show. Second largest ice fishing expo outside of St. Paul. And this thing's growing every year. How long before you catch St. Paul? Pretty soon, right?
I hope so. I hope this year. It would be nice to say something like that. But we're happy with whoever shows up, and hopefully we have a great crowd this weekend, this next weekend, I should say.
Yeah, so it's probably game on for you. There's probably not enough hours in the day.
Well, that's exactly right. Planning still continues, and preparations are being made, and making sure the inventory shows up, because there's been a lot of issues with the inventory with all the tariffs going on, that a lot of the stuff is allocated. So what we've been telling people is that when you come to the Institute and you see something that you want to buy and it meets your budget, you better buy it then, because you may not ever see it, and especially you won't see it at that price.
So One of the things, we'll get into everything that's going on with the trends in ice fishing and that, everything that's going on. And again, there's a pipeline issue, and that's not something that's been unusual. We've had our issues over the last 5 to 10 years, whether for whatever reasons, there's always been some issues here and there, but it seems like it worked out in the end. With everything and the shortages, what's the price points compared to this year to last year? And I ask that because I was told recently that certain electronic items, the standby ones, are actually starting to come down a little bit because there's so much new stuff.
Well, yeah, it really depends on what you're looking for, because like you said, the high-end stuff, you know, the forward-facing sonars, they will continue to gain momentum and gain in pricing a little bit. But some of the other stuff that's been around for a few years is actually coming down in price. So it really depends on what avenue a person really wants to proceed down with their ice fishing electronics.
Todd's my guest from the Dakota Angler. We'll get into more of the Ice Fishing Institute, but how's the fishing been up around the South Dakota area this year? Because if your results match what I've been seeing on Facebook, been a pretty good year for big walleyes.
It has been a decent year. It's been a kind of an off year. It's been a kind of a strange year, as you alluded to, for your area down there. But for the most part, we've caught a lot of larger walleyes this year, not only on the river, but in area lakes. And, you know, in the fall, this time of year is always the time to catch those big trophy walleyes anyway.
Is there any correlation between, you know, like a summer where you catch decent sized walleyes? I mean, I lost track of how many 25 and plus I've seen, right? And you see some 30s creeping in there. Any correlation between summer success and ice success?
Well, I think the one good thing is that you know that body of water, wherever you're fishing, and has those larger walleyes in it. And yeah. For the most part, a lot of people will, you know, catch them and then release them back into those that same lake or that same body of water. So the good thing is that you know that lake is, you know, has plenty of fish in it and it has plenty of good size walleyes in it. So it would be an indication for the upcoming ice season. But overall, you know, I think our state here in South Dakota does a great job in stocking the walleyes because we get hit pretty hard every winter as well as throughout the summer, and they usually stay ahead of the curve, so to speak.
So ice fishing has been one of the fastest growing categories in outdoors, not just the fishing world, that category, but it's up there as far as there's been two main leaders in categories. One's turkey hunting, and the other, and for a lot of reasons, and the other one has been ice fishing for a lot of reasons as well. With the expansion of ice fishing over the last really 20 years, what do you think, and I think I've asked you this before, Todd, so if I've asked you before, I apologize, but what do you think has been one of the couple top reasons on why we've had such an enthusiasm and an expansion of ice fishing?
Well, I think for the most part, it has become a little bit more of a family sport. You know, people are always looking for something to do in the wintertime, and skiing has gotten to be more expensive. You have to go to Colorado or someplace like that to really get into it. And so the people, you know, the winters have been long for many areas, and so they want to get out and ice fish. And a lot of times the moms are saying, okay, they'll take me with you. Let's take the kids too. So, and then also the explosion of, let's say, hubs that have allowed, you know, families to go and do it, you know, pretty cheaply. So that's the good thing about it.
I can't believe how well built and durable these portable hubs have become. There's always every year more and more innovation. And I know you and I talked about this. I can't remember if it was last year or the year before, but you know, we started talking about, okay, you've got your hub, now it's time to outfit your hub and how to be more efficient. Now we've got these diesel heaters, which are the hot, I don't know if they're the hottest, no pun intended, category in hub stuff. But guys are putting fans in there, and that's led to more common sense and being safe by putting carbon monoxide detectors in. 20 years ago, you never heard about stuff like that. And now it's,
no, you did.
Now it's a category.
Yeah, you know, and the whole thing is, ice camping has exploded, and these hubs have gotten large enough that you really don't need to have a permanent shack out there. You can get away with a hub, and now you got the heater to keep you warm out there, and then you take the proper safety measures, as you mentioned, with carbon monoxide detectors. You got a great weekend set up with minimal investment.
Yeah, and these little power inverters that you get, whether it's a Ryobi or a Makita or a DeWalt or whatever, that you slap a big battery on there. You can recharge your phone. You can charge your tablet. You can have entertainment. The LED lights. I've got a fan that I bought last year that hangs from the ceiling. It's a tent fan that's got a 15-hour battery life on it that runs the fan. And it's got an LED light on it. I could charge a phone off it if I wanted to as well. But I could recharge it off of my drill battery, right? And all that stuff takes up no space. I can still run a generator if I need to. But for what I'm doing, mostly I can get away without having a generator. And I could tow all that in on my sled and boom, here we go. Let's get into the specifics of the show before I ask you a couple more questions, Todd. First of all, what was the genesis on creating the Ice Institute?
Well, I wanted to bring an ice fishing show to the tri-state area and also a show that people could be proud of and be happy to attend and to be able to bring the latest and greatest in ice fishing to the area, and then also offer a great price in doing so, and also to show people that the Dakota Angler is your ice fishing headquarters, and that we're not going to leave the area. We're not a promoter. And so when you come to the show and you buy something and you want to buy something more related to those items, you know that we're right here in Sioux Falls. We're not going to pick up and leave and go to a different location. We're right here, and we're always going to be here backing up and supporting whatever items that you buy, and also to answer any questions you may have.
So every time I go up, I find stuff that is the next generation, the next innovation. And it could be as simple, like I mentioned before, was with the lights and the fans and the carbon monoxide detectors. But the changes in how we pop holes in the ice with, first of all, the K-Drill was a game changer a few years ago. Now, it's plastic blades, it's lighter, it's more ergonomic. The days of gas-powered drills are pretty much gone, right? Everything's becoming so much better with the lithium batteries. And just even the chairs that you sit in, everything just seems to be evolving in such a way. What this year do you think is going to be capturing people's eyes? Like, this is the thing that people are getting fired up about.
Well, I think we've already started to see it. We've sold a lot of them already before the season has even started, and that's the Otter Sonar Sled.
What?
Everyone has a lot. It's called the Otter Sonar Sled.
Uh-huh.
It has a compartment to carry your forward-facing sonar out, because everyone knows how heavy those things can be. Well, now you got a sled to pull that out, plus all your other equipment goes on the sled, and you can fish off it as well. So it's very much a sled very similar to what Strike Master had in years past, but now Otter's come out with their version of it, and we've been selling a lot of it, and a lot of people are really looking forward to taking advantage of the pricing at the Institute to buy one themselves.
That sounds awesome.
A lot of people have really enjoyed it and really liked it. And again, I think that's going to be the hottest item. The second one I think is going to get a lot of attention is the new Maven ice auger from Strike Master. We got these in probably a month and a half ago, and these things are unbelievably light. They cut like no other. They got unbelievable power. So again, it's another evolution into the ice auger business.
What kind of a price point are on those?
Right around $550 to $600, depending on the size that hole that you're looking to drill. But again, there are going to be some institute pricing that is going to make it very interesting for you not to walk away with one.
But those types of batteries that are in that's something that when you show up, even if you're fishing for 3 days, you're going to have battery power.
Yeah, and we talked earlier about the innovations in ice fishing. I think that's the one thing that we often overlook is that the importance and the innovation when it comes to lithium batteries. They've gotten to be so much stronger and so much more powerful than ever before that it allows you to power many other items other than just the auger. And so that has allowed a lot of people to really flourish in the ice fishing business.
A few years ago, when I was up at the Ice Institute, is that 4 years ago? I can't remember. How many years you been doing this now?
17.
All right. So I think we've talked now. This is our fifth year that you and I have talked. So maybe it's been 5 years ago. I can't remember. But I remember walking through there with my buddy, my ice fishing partner, and he goes, look at that. And we were looking at augers. And it was the very first time that I saw plastic auger. And I was like, what? That's brilliant. You don't need all that heavy metal weight because the bit does the work, right? The metal part goes through the hole. That's all you need to worry about, right? You got that. You got that safety part right there. You got those bits to get the ice out of the way. You don't need a big metal heavy auger like you're moving corn. You're not moving grain, right? You're moving ice chunks. When I first saw that, it was a lightning bolt. I'm like, oh my God, this is so much lighter than everything we've been dragging around all the time. This is just incredible. And just little things like that that I wasn't expecting that I saw. And this was right when live scopes were starting to come out. So there were some demonstrations and that sort of thing. The forward-facing sonar, whatever you want to call them. And, of course, at that point, they were still there's still a pretty aggressive price point on them. But the guys that have them absolutely swear by them. But there's demonstrations like that. And there's pro staff and seminars. But talk about the seminars and some of the big pro staffs that are going to be represented at the Ice Institute.
Well, this year we're doing something different, Crash. We're not actually going to have seminars because of the fact that there's just a number of people that would rather do their mini seminars in their own booth.
Oh, yeah, makes perfect sense.
It's basically talk about what you just got done explaining to show people the latest innovation and how they use it out on the ice. And so that's what you're going to see across the entire show floor all weekend long is you're going to see people inside the booths demonstrating how they use their equipment, how you can use their equipment and use it more effectively and efficiently and be able to ask those questions that you want to ask instead of, being quiet because you don't want to ask the question in front of 50 to 100 people.
Yeah.
It's a much more relaxed way of doing it.
All right. This is going to be a great event. Give people, I have another follow-up question after this, but right now, give the people the details, time, where it's at, best way to get there, et cetera.
Yeah, November 7th through the 9th, so next Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Sioux Falls Arena and Convention Center. It's going to be the Dakota Angler Ice Institute. $7 to get in the door, $15
so
for the entire weekend.
It's so cheap.
And
oh, my God.
Parking's absolutely free, so you don't have to worry about that. Hours of the show on Friday will be 3 to 9. Saturday will be 10 to 7. And then Sunday, 10 to 3. So, again, it's an easy way to get to the Sioux Falls Arena Convention Center. If you're coming up north out of Omaha, just to go all the way up to I-29 and take the Russell Street exit or the Sioux Falls Arena Convention Center exit, and yeah, it will lead you right to it.
It's an easy drive. People are like, oh, Sioux Falls, you're there in no time. You go up there, attend the show, grab a hot dog or whatever, and Sioux Falls got a bunch of great restaurants too. Grab a bite to eat and head back, and you leave 6-7 o'clock in the morning, spend quality time at the seminar at the Institute, and still be back before sunset. Works up. Yeah, it's I do it almost every year. All right, Dakota Ice Institute, Dakota, it's gonna be great. Now, Todd, I need to put on your forecasting hat because everybody's coming out with their winter forecast. And I'm sure you've been asked this a million times because you have a background. You're a meteorologist. You're a scientist. You're one of the smart guys. You're one of the brilliant ones around here. What kind of winter are we looking at?
Right now, the way it looks like is colder than normal, so much colder than what we've been experiencing for the past 2 years, which is good if you're wanting to build up the ice shield or ice sheet around the area.
Yeah.
And then as far as snowfall is concerned, about normal, so a little bit more than what we had last year and quite a bit more than what we had 2 years ago. So, again, I think it's going to be more of a typical winter around here than what we have had the past 2 or 3 years.
What's Sioux Falls in the local snowfall?
Right around 30 inches.
I think we're between 28 and 30, depending on the time of the year, right? Guys will say 20. Yeah, so that's for down here, right? Last year, Epley, which, because a lot of people live at the airport, Epley had 17 inches, but most of the metro had 11. We had a little pocket that kind of stuck downtown and added some snowfall, but you go 1 mile either direction from that, and you were about 11 to 14 inches total. We had late ice down here. We had a really warm December. I golfed in December last year. Right. I golfed in December in a 3/4 zip. It wasn't cold, right? We didn't get on the ice last year until like the first week of January, which is horrible. Every indication says what you've been saying. Now, I'm not a believer in the woolly bear caterpillar because I found 14 of them. I have 14 pictures of them, and every one of them is different. So don't come at me, people, telling me, well, the woolly bear pet. No. Listen to these guys. El Nino is going to be, or La Nina right now, right?
Well, right now, basically what we say, there's really not a strong indication of El Nino or La Nina, so I say La Nada.
Which means basically neutral, which is normal, right? That's kind
correct.
Of, yeah. Well, let's fingers crossed for a great ice season. Looking forward to getting up there again. Every year, it's a fantastic show. And I never go out of my way to stop you when I'm up there because I know you're busier than I'll get out. Like, he's running around. There's Todd right there. Going. But and that's okay. Seriously, it's a fantastic show. I really appreciate you taking the time and being my my northern connection when it comes to hard water stuff and freshwater stuff. Always a pleasure, Todd. I appreciate it, and best of luck with the show.
Well, thanks a lot, Crash. Yeah, and we'll see you this week, this next weekend, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Stuff like that just gets me fired up for ice fishing. Thanks to Todd Heikamp from Dakota Angler in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and their 17th annual Ice Institute. I've been familiar with it for probably about 7 years now. I can't remember. I was looked this up to find out when it was. I had Todd on for the first time. I think it's been 5 years now, something like that. But getting ready to wrap things up here on Crash Davis Outdoors, brought to you by BD Turf Cars, bdturfcars.com. I tell you what, end of the season, now's the perfect time to be talking to those guys. Or if you've got a golf cart that you kind of limp through, like, yeah, I need some new rims, I need a new stereo, I need lights, I need headlights, put a new seat on it, whatever. Maybe put a lift kit on it. They can hook you up. Now is the great time of the year to take advantage of that. BDTurfCars.com and Chili Dogs Foods of Fire. Now, outdoor stuff, we got you. We got some great game items. But it's also going to be turkey season in no time. Those brine bags, they sometimes are hard to come by. We got the entire brine kit from Lane's ready to rock and roll. And start getting that stuff ready to go, man. And Christmas gifts, that sort of thing. Gift baskets. Turn and burn them for you at Chili Dogs. Great stuff. All right, so this is go time if you're a bow hunter. Absolutely. The rut, pre-rut, it's happening right now. Now is absolutely the best time. Get your keisters out there and sit the best you can. Opening weekend of pheasant season, last weekend, oh my God, did I see a lot of birds. Oh, I was so jealous. I wasn't able to go. But so many tailgates full of birds. Definitely one of the best bird seasons we've had in quite some time. And I would imagine that the bow season is going to be pretty good as well. We're only a couple of weeks away from Nebraska firearm season. It's just, where the heck is this year going? Starting to see a lot of waterfowl coming through. We need a cold front to kind of get everything triggered. 2 weeks, it looks like. Next week, pretty stable. You're still going to see a few. Been seeing some more geese around my house lately. I don't know if those are locals or what. Not massive patterns of them at all. But I can't wait to get out a goose on them. I can't wait to put a goose on my smoker. I'm really looking forward to it. Looking forward to getting out some pheasants, too. Get a deer stand. I need more free time. That's all there is to it. This working stuff, it's overrated. I'm going to be hit to Sioux Falls next weekend, though, for the Dakota Ice Institute. So I'll have a full report on that in 2 weeks here on Crash Davis Outdoors. But I'm going to try to sneak up Saturday, I think. We got a trade show going on at Ralston Arena as well, so it's a matter of working around that schedule. But nevertheless, it's a glorious time of the year. Look, I got almost enough firewood to get through the winter. You know, a couple more hours, and I should have plenty to go. So I'm getting the ancillary stuff done, so it's playtime. I'm just counting down to time to get it out in the outdoors. I just want to get my 20-gauge out and blast, you know. It'd be great stuff. Hey, thank you to Brett Blumenthal. Crash Davis Outdoors, the link will be up there for the podcast as well, and Todd Heitkamp. Todd's the best, man. Thank you guys very much for everything, for making the show enjoyable. Especially thanks to my friends at BD Turf Cars, bdturfcars.com, and Chili Dogs Foods of Fire, online at chilidogs.com. Have a great time in the outdoors, kids. As always, thanks, Pappy, for the inspiration.